Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link on this Tuesday, June the 7th. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, soul searching among Kenyans after the deaths of at least two people when police opened fire on an anti-government rally in Kisumu.
Let the two parties agree together for the sake of peace and reconciliation to this country.
I want the government to engage the opposition in dialogue and other stakeholders.
And young people in Zimbabwe, unhappy with the leadership of President Robert Mugabe.
We decided to come out and show our displeasure to the government of Zimbabwe that enough is enough.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
At least two protesters were shot dead and scores were injured when Kenyan police opened fire on an anti-government rally in the city of Kisumu on Monday. Kenya's CORD alliance has been staging protests since April to demand a shake-up of the country's electoral commission ahead of presidential elections next year. The protests were suspended last week to allow for talks with the government, but resumed on Monday. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula reports.
It was the fifth time in less than 2 months that the opposition were back on the streets to pile more pressure on the government to heed to their demands.
We are here because of IBC.
In Kisumu, where deaths were reported, property of unknown value was destroyed after protesters engaged the police in running battles. In Nairobi, things were different. No ugly incidents were witnessed as police resorted to watch from a distance. One of the firebrand opposition politicians, Johnson Muthama, announced that failure by the government to meet the opposition to agree on modalities of disbanding the controversial electoral commission, the Monday demonstrations will now take place more often.
We are telling Jubilee government, if you don't accept dialogue to take place. And note this, we have been doing this on Mondays. We are going to make it now Monday and Thursday. We give them another 2 weeks. If they don't respond positively, we are going to make it 4 days a week. And thereafter it will be 7 days a week. And thereafter it's going to be 24 hours continuously. We will sit on the roads, we will sleep on the roads. There will be no chance for a bicycle to be able to pass through where we'll be converging.
The opposition leader Raila Odinga, who opted to address his supporters in Kiswahili, assured them that the Kenyan High Court had officially allowed them to continue with their demonstrations. Raila Odinga, the leader of opposition in Kenya, is announcing that Kenya High Court has ruled that the demonstrations that are to take place are to continue. I also sought the views of ordinary Kenyans about the demonstrations.
Let the two parties agree together for the sake of peace and reconciliation to this country.
I want the government to engage the opposition in dialogue and other stakeholders.
I would like these people to discuss and just make sure there is peace, because if we're fighting now, what about when the elections come?
We want IBC to go because, you see, there is more things that happen, which is not good.
No anti-IEBC demonstrations were held in the Kenyan coastal city of Mombasa as the residents are observing the holy month of Ramadan, in which they are expected to be peaceful.
IEBC being a reference to the Electoral Commission. That was James Shimanyula reporting. Returning to Kisumu, local police chief there has said that the police shootings were under investigation. Peter Wendo is a political analyst and project advisor with the Rule of Law Programme for Sub-Saharan Africa at the Konrad Adenauer Foundation. Isaac Mugabe asked him for his assessment of the lethal clashes.
Unfortunately, this issue has to be contextualized. We are coming from a background where the police were used to using force at any given time for anything that was always anti-government. And unfortunately, even under the new constitutional dispensation, there is still some work to be done in terms of letting the police force know the parameters within which they need to operate. However, I must say that the police have the responsibility of protecting lives and property of people. So one must always look at why did they open the fire in the city of Kisumu? Could there have been any violence? Was their life endangered of ordinary citizens by the protesters, or was it just an action by the police?
CORD leader Raila Odinga has vowed to continue with the protests regardless of the loss of life whenever his group holds protests. Don't you think he should also be cautious, tone down on his rhetoric to prevent what happened in 2007-2008?
Absolutely. I think those kind of remarks by either the CORD leader or even government is not something that Kenya needs at the moment, because if people are going to lose their lives, and we are not achieving the end product of the whole process, then what? So I think it is the responsibility on both sides of the divide, opposition and government, to make sure that they offer the leadership that Kenyans want. What they think is good for Kenyans, I think they need to do that legally and in a responsible manner. So we don't need those kind of statements from any leader from any divide.
The Jubilee Alliance, led by Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, insists that he has no powers whatsoever to disband the Electoral Commission, that it was instituted in accordance to the Constitution. How do you see the standoff between the two sides ending?
I think the position from the President and the leadership has been that, yes, we can remove the commissioners, but this must be done within the confines of the Constitution, which provides for an elaborate mechanism of how the commissioners, and Mark, it is the commissioners in their own individual capacity that can be removed, not wholesome, so that if there is a case against a certain commissioner, then there is a process through which that commissioner can be removed. And therefore, I think CORD, yes, have a case where they say that the credibility of the IEBC as an institution is questionable. But then the process, if we are to look at it legally and constitutionally, there is a way, a tribunal has to be formed for these people to be removed. And so I think it's about time that we don't just stick to one way of solving the problem. It calls for political and legal process to have the settlement resolved. Ultimately, we need to sit down and talk and find our way forward.
Political analyst Peter Wendo.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
A wave of discontent with President Robert Mugabe's leadership among young people is sweeping across parts of Zimbabwe. Young people feel that the ruling ZANU-PF party, which has governed Zimbabwe for the last 36 years, has not done enough to improve their standard of living. From the capital Harare, DW's Privilege Mushaniri reports.
I am standing here at African Unity Square, a park in central Harare. Since the beginning of this month, some youth have been camping here. They say they want to show their discontent against the ruling government. It is winter time in Zimbabwe, but this group is braving cold days and nights, demanding that the government of veteran leader President Robert Mugabe should offer solutions to the country's struggling economy or step down. These youth are determined to sit here for 16 days and 16 nights. They have named their demonstration 16 Days Occupation. One of the protesters, Linda Tsungirirai Masarira, 34, an assistant train driver who lost her job in 2015, says she decided to join the protest because of her daily economic struggles.
We decided to come out and show our displeasure to the government of Zimbabwe that enough is enough. Is this the Zimbabwe we want? We are saying no. That's why we are here braving the cold nights. We are going to stay here until we get the answers. You have abused Zimbabweans for a very long time. You have oppressed us enough, because the life that we are living is not sustainable. We have got no future.
The protesters have had their share of state security heavy-handedness. On the fourth night of the Central Park occupation, they were heavily assaulted by suspected state security agencies, and some were hospitalized. This has not dampened their resolve. Some of the protesters I spoke to told me that they would not give up.
If I'm going to die because you're beating me, it's better because I'm speaking out. Beat me to death if that's what it means.
The beatings are what actually propel me and motivate me to continue doing this, because the more I'm beaten, the more I realize that Zimbabwe deserves better.
Disgruntled young people feel the current leadership has stolen their future because of failed policies and misplaced priorities. One such young man is 28-year-old AC Lumumba, who resigned from President Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party in May 2016 in protest of what he says is a government that has lost touch with reality. Lumumba says time is now ripe for a youth political party to contest in the 2018 elections.
We've been sharing our frustrations in different ways, some on social media, some on the ground, some in youth groups, and now we need a culmination, a formation of those frustrations into a youth political movement. In 2 years, this country will be changed by young people who are going to go to an election and turn the page.
Some government ministers are responding to the debates and views shared on social media. It is yet to be seen if government will act on the issues being raised. Political analyst Takura Jangaja says the youths are acting within their right.
Government has paid attention. They take it seriously in terms of their responses. You can tell that if a minister responds in anger or in frustration, it means they take it quite seriously. Perhaps they'll try and act in relation to countering these grievances. They will least likely act to change the actual policies themselves.
In 2013 elections, President Mugabe's ZANU-PF party promised to improve lives of young Zimbabweans by creating 2 million jobs, but this has not materialized. More time has been spent in dealing with internal party fissures created by senior party members who are jostling to succeed the 92-year-old leader. Despite the growing discontent by some youths, thousands of youths from Mugabe's party gathered in a rally last month to show support for their leader.
Privilege Mushaniri in Zimbabwe.
Africa on the move.
People living in remote mountain villages in Lesotho are often forced to walk long distances when in need of healthcare services. However, the NGO Solidarmed is now helping to alleviate the problem by introducing mobile clinics. In Africa on the Move, we visit one of these clinics and meet nurse Moklatsi and Dr. Fatou Rilie-Ae. This report was written by Stefan Mull and is read by Jane Yingyi.
Butha Buthe in the lowlands of Lesotho is where young nurse Moekte Motlatse is based. Apart from offering health services, she also trains her fellow nurses working in various healthcare facilities in Lesotho.
As the clinical mentor, I go to the health centres and work together with the health centre nurses on nursing duties, basically, and activities that we have to do in regard to health care services to the patients. It also involves providing the trainings to the nurses, especially the new ones who come from the training straight to work.
Nurse Motlatse works closely with Dr. Fatou Rilie-Ae. Each day they have to drive long distances to get to those who need their services most, especially those who can't make it to the nearest health center or hospital. They have to use a four-wheel drive car due to few accessible roads, unpredictable weather, and mountainous terrain.
In all of this, we are fighting the number one killer disease in Lesotho today, which is the HIV/AIDS pandemic. Lesotho is number two in the world with a high prevalence of HIV, is a hotspot of HIV. So ensuring that communities are rich with health care, I mean, also it's a way to ensure, to see that this problem that we are facing is attacked at the root of it, which is at the community itself.
After a few hours' drive, they finally get to their destination. Today they have brought their mobile clinic services to the people of Rakotueni village. Without wasting time, the medical team gets down to work.
I've quickly done the TB screening because, again, in this country, you have high prevalence of TB. Now, that's the importance. I mean, you bring comprehensive health care, and then you're able to leverage on that to also address the high prevalence diseases that we have in the country.
Nurse Mutlatse uses this opportunity to educate the young people about sensitive health issues, such as sexual transmitted diseases and HIV and AIDS. She advised them on different ways to protect themselves and others.
We were talking about removing our heads. That's what we called it in Lesotho, but it's actually male circumcision.
It helps us to prevent transmitting sexual diseases.
The World Health Organization, WHO, encourages male circumcision, saying it reduces the risk of HIV infection in men by approximately 60%. However, WHO recommends the circumcision to be carried out by medical professionals.
The diseases are there and they're being transmitted, but now access is another thing. You can just see the terrain. Yeah, they have to cross the rivers, go down the mountains and climb. And you can just imagine after such a pain of circumcision, I think it's going to be difficult for someone to walk such a distance back home.
The mobile clinic team will organize transport for the young men who wish to undergo safe circumcision procedure in a hospital. And while Dr. Faturiele is seeing more patients in the primary school of the village, Mutlatse continues with her health education with those still waiting for consultation. It will take a month before Nurse Mutlatse and her team come back again.
That report was written by Stefan Mull. Around Africa, Rwanda is known for its quick economic recovery following the 1994 genocide. Africa Link's Abubakar Jallo was recently in Rwanda in the capital, Kigali. Now, his home country is Sierra Leone, which also endured a brutal conflict, and he's been comparing the two.
Kigali now counts as Africa's newcomer in the list of metropolitan cities in the continent. Like Lagos, Nigeria in the west, or Nairobi, Kenya in the east, commercial minibuses account for most of the noise in the city. But unlike those mega cities, Kigali is clean and well organized. That's how Kigali sounds at night. In my home country, Sierra Leone, the night sky will be filled with dance tunes, blaring from sharp, rickety speakers in every corner of the capital, Freetown. That is, if there is electricity. But even with steady electricity supply, Kigali enjoys a perfect decorum. Could this be attributed to the people? Rwandans are by nature very quiet people. They speak below their voice and are extremely polite. Last night, I tripped at the entrance of my hotel. Before I realized, hotel staff and even local guests at the hotel lobby came to my aid, apologizing. Are these the same people who were chasing one another with pangas or machetes 22 years ago? In 1994, an ethnic Hutu militia group called Interahamwe descended on Kigali and carried out mass killings of minority Tutsis. The genocide, in which about 1 million people were killed, left a tainted image on the tiny East African nation that somehow changed. President Paul Kagame has unarguably turned Rwanda around. He brought the country from an apocalyptic genocide era to a successful and very vibrant economy. For that, he's a darling of the West. Rwandans hardly see anything negative about their leader, that is if they do talk about him at all. And some of the problems between Hutus and Tutsis still remain. Just last week, a young Tutsi boy was found murdered and set ablaze outside Kigali. I asked a few people around what could have been the possible motive. The answers were all similar. He could have been a son of a genocide victim whose perpetrators were sent away to serve prison terms. I learned later that this type of attacks happen every now and then. This was Freetown after the general elections in 2007. Incumbent President Ernest Bai Koroma had just been elected for the first time. In the celebrations, I ran into two men. one with an amputated limb. The other, a full-bodied man, had taken his crutches away and was carrying him on his shoulder, dancing and celebrating. The single-limbed man was shouting, "This man chopped off my leg, but I have forgiven him." In the time spent talking to people here in Kigali, I see a completely different picture from that of Sierra Leone. My country hasn't been able to do the magic of completely turning its economy around. But from the level of forgiveness in Sierra Leone after a bloody civil war which killed nearly 500,000 people, I think Rwandans could learn a lot from us. But when it comes to economic development, Sierra Leone also has a lot to learn from Rwanda. Greetings from the land of the thousand hills.
Abubakar Jalo.
Making a difference.
Can literature be used as a weapon against terrorism? Well, writers and authors in Cameroon, Chad and Niger believe that it can, and they've been putting pen to paper in the fight against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Maki Kinseka reports from Yaoundé.
This street band plays to attract people to Hausa quarters in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé, that is home to thousands of people from northern Cameroon and neighboring Chad that have been displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency. They have come out in large numbers to listen to writers from Cameroon and Chad. A poem from a collection published in the book No to Terrorism is read by Cameroonian writer Christian Gange.
Forward, ever brothers in arms from Chad. We are optimistic that victory will be ours. We kneel before the Chadian army to salute their courage and greet Chadians in Cameroon and Chadian writers here present. Thank you.
Chadian author Renaud Degemnayel says they have written the book as part of ongoing efforts to incorporate counter-radicalization into the curriculum and stop Boko Haram from preaching its ideology.
The main messages in either of the two books by Cameroon and Chadian writers is that there is no religion in the world, be it Christianity or Islam, that promotes violence, and that those who hide behind Islam or God to indoctrinate and send people as human suicide bombers are not religious leaders, but criminals, and people of all walks of life should stand up and fight them.
Renaud Degemnayel says Cameroon and Niger have already accepted the book to be used at basic education establishments to educate children from the moment they start going to school, that religious extremism is dangerous and not from God. He says they are still negotiating with the government of Chad to include such books in its educational system.
Les agissements de la secte terroriste Boko Haram.
The Boko Haram activities concern all social classes, and that is why, as Chadian writers, we decided to come up with a book made up of information, poems, and publications by university lecturers to say no to terrorism, because it's necessary for all Cameroonian and Chadian children, and even beyond, to have the notion of fighting against terrorism from their young ages.
Cameroon, Chad, Niger, Benin and Nigeria have been fighting Boko Haram, whose insurgency has extended to 7 years. The terrorist group at times distribute tracts with their propaganda messages on territories they capture and places they attack.
Maki Kinseka reporting from Yaoundé. And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. Two people were killed and scores were injured when police opened fire on an anti-government rally in Kisumu in Kenya. We've also been hearing about discontent among young people with the regime of President Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe and about mobile clinics in Lesotho. We welcome your comments on this programme. You can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com. A letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Or an SMS to country code 49160 957 59510. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now.